When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Episode 5 of Yellow Jackets is still over, and we're without an episode to discuss this week, but we're just getting started talking about the first half of Season 2 on Post Show Recaps. We're live on YouTube and taking your questions, comments, and theories. I'm Jess Sterling, and joining me to sink our teeth into the first part of Season 2 is Grace Leader.
Nom 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 nom. Hi.
Making yummy noises.
Have dinner,
Grace. Yeah. I'm having withdrawals from no Yellow Jackets episode.
Yeah, what the heck? I mean, I said this to you and our friend Josh Wegler, well, this is weird. I mean, I love the show, and I will trust that they're doing whatever they got to do. And I know that there's only 9 episodes this season, so the math works out that we're going to end around the same time. This is not like extending it, but I guess the first like theory crafting we should do is like, why take a break? It was so fun on network TV. You know, it's like you take a week, you know, it'd be like, yeah, we've got 24 episodes, we're gonna spread that out over like 34 weeks or whatever. And so you get these like winter breaks, and you gotta line it up with sweeps and all that stuff on a streaming network. I don't understand.
We did get one piece of feedback that was a little bit of theory crafting on why there was a 1 week hiatus. This is from Tracy. She says, as far as I know, season 2 still has 10 episodes. Tracy, I think it has 9, but you know, I'm pretty sure. But she says, it's just that the show doesn't want its season finale getting overshadowed by the Succession series finale over the busy U.S. Memorial Day holiday weekend. So that's interesting. I mean, it is.
If I'm mapping this out.
Yeah.
Correctly, I think like the first weekend of June will be, I mean, I definitely get like maybe we accidentally boxed ourselves a quarter by doing the same time as Succession, and we don't want our finale on the same day because we're going to get swallowed in content, which is too bad because Yellow Jackets, as much as I love Succession, I think Succession is maybe the best show on TV. Yellow Jackets is the second best show on TV right now. I mean, there's so much TV on right now. It's like ridiculous. And I was like, Barry. Like, oh, Mrs. Like,
oh,
Davis.
Mrs. Davis.
Ted Lasso. Silo's coming out soon. That might be good. You know, it's like, boy. But like, Yellow Jackets deserves to be talked about. And so I do get it. But now that's not going to, I don't think that's true. Now, like 5 more episodes, I think. So it's going to line up at the same time as Succession.
It's going to line up at the same time. Know. Yeah. I don't understand the break. I mean, part of me thinks it's, we ended this most recent episode on like a bit of a cliffhanger, right? Where like Shauna's giving birth. So maybe they just wanted to extend that another week.
No, it makes no sense. I mean, that's, you know, I don't mean to poop on your theory immediately, but like, you know,
it doesn't make any sense. No, I agree with you. My theory makes no sense. I don't understand it. We're still reeling, but why did you do this? Why you do this to us?
Why exactly?
Yeah. Yes. But on the other hand, it gives us the opportunity to stop down, take a beat on things, kind of reassess where we are midway through the season.
Yeah.
Go over some, I gathered some news that we got from this week, some articles. We got some theories we can go over, a little bit of feedback. And of course, if you're listening to this live, hello, hi, we're on YouTube. We could take your live feedback. If you're not, you could still go in the archives and watch us on YouTube if you want. I'm wearing signature yellow for Yellow Jackets. So that's
this is exciting. As close as I could get. I've been rocking a blue.
It's a green puff
on my microphone. It is green. There's no yellow, so it's the closest I could get.
There you wasn't don't own anything one, else guess, so. That's yellow. What about, well, you probably honestly would have been closer with the blue because the Yellow Jackets are yellow and blue.
Yeah, all right, well, and that's totally really effed it up, I guess.
So sorry. That's okay. Not to poo-poo on your, you know, attempt at Yellow Jackets pride, but you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, do we want to get into a little bit of the news and the articles that I've looked into this week?
Yeah, very fun. Let's do it.
So very recently, Variety put out an article, an interview with Liv Hewson. They play the younger version of Van. And now, well, there's been a lot of buzz, pun intended, about Emmy categories, right? Like the Emmy nominations, putting themselves up for Emmys, right? I know Shauna's younger counterpart put herself up for nomination. But they talked in this article, Liv Hewson did, about not putting themselves up for Emmy contention because of the binary man-woman separation in acting categories. They say, I don't fall into either of those categories, so I'm just not. I'm going to not do that, which is very interesting. And this whole, I'm going to link the article in the show notes. It kind of talks about like a little bit, like all these LGBTQ activists and allies who have advocated over the years for gender neutral acting categories. And I just like this article was very interesting and it makes a lot of sense. Like why have binary categories in acting? I don't know, but they're there. I mean, it's probably just the answer is,
well, that's the way we've always done it. Yeah, I had a coworker who started about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And I said in a meeting once, she said, asked me a question. I said, oh, that's the way we've always done it. And then she asked me another, I said, that's the way we've always done it. And I said, it's a recurring theme around these parts. And she always brings it up in meetings. And she'd be like, Grace's favorite line is, I don't know, we did that thing because we always done it. We don't need to do it. And I feel like that's acting categories. There was a big push around, there was a conversation around the time of the Oscars, and I think, I don't want to get this wrong, but I believe it was because, was it Jamie Lee Curtis, maybe? I don't know, I can't remember. Somebody was I think it was Jamie Lee Curtis who got asked a question and talked about how we don't need to split the categories into men and women. I think that there is the like immediate feedback or concern I always hear from that is like, well, only men will get nominated.
That's what I've seen as well. Yes.
And that could be true, but you could, there's a very simple solution, which is there's just a maximum number of nominations that can be given to a man in a category, someone who identifies as a man. And then I believe that solves your problem.
Yeah.
So
yeah, Hewson spoke to that exact same thing, saying there is an implied fatalism there, which suggests that we've all agreed that equality is impossible. And that's sad.
That's also just like, it's saying, the argument there is just that I think that it's true that could happen, not because men are inherently better actors than women, which I think some people do genuinely believe, and you're wrong, and you need to figure out why you have that belief. And the problem, I think, is that I think people are inherently sexist subconsciously. We're all I think we're probably all a little bit sexist because that's the way our society works, is that it's patriarchal, so we value men above women in many ways, and so we just need to like fix our brains to not think like that, because they've been broken for many, many years to think that way, to think that men are superior to women. And so we need to just break out of that thing, and this is actually a good way to start that thinking.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I do worry that like more men would be nominated than women. That's because we live in a patriarchal sexist society. That's why I think that would happen, not because I think that more men are more deserving of right. nominations than women and non-binary people. But I think we could, you could just set a limit on how many men are allowed to be nominated.
Yeah.
And then that should solve the problem.
Yeah. But I just thought it was interesting, Liv Hewson speaking out on this as like someone who has absolutely loved their acting and watching it these past couple of years in Yellow Jackets. certainly deserving of an Emmy nomination.
I love this. Are we going to start awarding the best female and male director or female or male cinematographer? Because I'll understand that implicitly would be insulting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
you I'll keep we'll things that... as they are right now, but I just won't be participating. Basically the thing is like there, it's a great, great point that they make, which is it's fine for you to do this thing that you do. It, like you could just keep doing it the way you do if you don't want change, but it inherently means there's no space for Liv Hewson. There's no place for them to feel comfortable to submit themselves in the category. So there's no space for them and therefore they cannot be recognized. So I think it's
they cannot be recognized. It means that non-binary people in general cannot get recognized, which is a problem.
Unless they fit into a binary. You like choose to nominate yourself in the men's category or the women's category. And I actually do think the reason why I think Liv Hewson is a phenomenal ally to be doing this. Actually, the fact that HBO just had two shows back to back that starred a non-binary lead in Emma D'Arcy and then Bella Ramsey. I do feel like that's something very big that, that this will become a conversation. Kate Dillon and Billions also, this was Kate Dillon is non-binary. So it's going to be like, yeah, what are we doing? What are you doing? How are you going to fix it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Another article that I read this week was from the Hollywood Reporter, which interviewed both actresses who play Misty, so Christina Ricci, and it's very interesting and Samantha Hanratty plays the younger version of Misty. But something that Christina Ricci said just like made me laugh a little bit, and also it's just very interesting. She said she's innately not a trustworthy person because of her wants and because her wants and desires and impulses negatively impact other people. She's like a Lenny. She will crush the puppy to death. But also, when I was reading it, I realized this also puts any new relationship with a new person in jeopardy, because to get close to somebody might be revealing who she is. And in that case, it's going to end in tragedy, which is like not saying great things for Walter in the future.
No, definitely.
Saw what happened to Crystal/Kristen.
Yeah. Wow. She's like a Lenny. Wow. An advice of men. Wow. Crush the puppy to death. I believe that. That's fair. Wow. Of Mice and Men spoilers. Come on.
Sorry, everyone. If you haven't read Of Mice and Men in middle school, I apologize.
Let me give a shout out quickly to one of Josh Wigler's, co-workers over at Vanity Fair. Jackie Strauss writing incredible content, not just about Yellow Jackets, but about Yellow Jackets. Did an oral history of the feast, which is really phenomenal if you get a chance to check that out. It's spliced together all the interviews she had done with a bunch of the different cast members and wrote this oral history of the feast,
which is phenomenal. Crew.
Yeah, talking about Succession and Mrs. Davis and all sorts of stuff over there on the Hollywood Reporter. So we're checking out. Yeah,
my favorite, honestly, my go-to when it comes to the Yellow Jackets interviews is Jackie Strauss. But yeah, it's really funny too, because Samantha Hanratty talks about her relationship with Nuha. I apologize if I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but she plays Crystal. Mm-hmm. And she was like, it was so awful because we became very close. You know, we film all the time together. And so when we had that big scene where she's rejecting me, saying, "You're a psycho, you're a horrible person, it's your fault we're out here," she's like, "I'm not a method actor, but I felt that and I felt really bad." And but shout out to her. I really loved Crystal this season. Sad to see her go, but like I kind of felt like we all felt it was inevitable that she would be gone.
Yeah, if you're new and you show up at the beginning of season two, it's like, yeah, I don't know that I fully believe that you're making out of this thing alive. I think you just got added to die.
Yeah, we Marissa and I did a death draft at the beginning of the season. This was now previously due to watching episode one. I feel like we would have had Crystal on our bingo cards right away.
100%.
Now people like Mari are standing out to me. Like, Mari, if somebody doesn't kill you by the end of all of this, I'd be surprised.
Yeah, Mari's become quite vocal in the camp of Lottie, which feels not good.
She says a visibility spike, which usually doesn't mean great things.
That's right.
For the character.
That's right.
One other article I found this week was Harper's Bazaar interview with Lauren Ambrose, who plays Adult Van. And oh gosh, okay, Lauren Ambrose, icon. If you haven't seen 6 Feet Under, just like stellar, absolutely stellar in that that show. And apparently, the casting I think the casting people were the same people, or at least one of them was, which makes sense for her involvement in the show. But when asked going into the season, what did you know about Van and her character's trajectory? Lauren says the character was described to me as someone who definitely seems okay on the surface. She's doing all right. She's running a business. Then I started getting all these clues from my wardrobe fitting to my apartment and my business that this person is stuck. And in particular, stuck in the time before she had this crazy traumatic experience. And so for me as an actor, the question was, how will what they went through show up in this person 25 years later? I think the character feels hardened, tougher, more protected. She was always a protector, obviously, with Thaisa especially. And she was always a survivor even before the plane crash. Specifically speaking to her relationship with her mother, and she's like slapping her to wake her up to drive her to school in the morning. Mm-hmm. This is fascinating. What do you make of a Van living in the past, if you will, right? She like runs a VHS rental company.
Yeah. Well, the who wrote this article here? I want to make sure I get it right, but they wrote, they asked this question about Van being stuck in the metaphor of like running a VHS store, and having just like content and selling like content that's from the time that she went into the crash. Like, it's really interesting. And then really interesting, she does not answer that question. It's like, I don't think I can say anything about being stuck in the past. That is really, really fascinating to me. It's like enough. This is from Nohan. I'm going to show Ray. This is, that's so interesting. The fact that she's just like, yeah, I can't answer that. I don't think I'm allowed to answer that question.
They have to dance around a lot of spoilers, especially, I mean, when we're just meeting adult Van this season, and like, there's still so much left to explore with her, specifically around the OxyContin that she takes, right? Like why is she taking that? Is she an addict? Is she ill? Is like, is it just a one-time relief? It doesn't seem like it is.
I think that's really interesting in terms of, cause part of my thinking is that for sure, I mean, we're all, you know, we all have this on our bingo card, but the adults going back. And I do think like part of going back is to figure out how to like return whatever the spirit is that's, you know, been reawakened after so many years, 30 years. Yeah. And it does feel like there has to be people who are in the present day who have figured out how to reawaken it and are maybe interested in keeping in having that happen. I think that the piece about being stuck is really interesting. And the fact that it's not just like, yeah, well, her high school experience is basically ruined by being in a plane crash. So it would make sense that there's some sort of, you know, I don't think this is exactly arrested development, but like, you know, a culture freeze of being like, I feel like this, and this is, you know, not the same analogy. Like I have not been stuck in a plane crash in the Canadian wilderness, but I do feel like for trans people, there's often like, you know, like, man, if I just could have had prom, and queer people in general, like if I just could have had prom the way I actually, you know, would have wanted to experience prom, or like whatever other, insert any other high school experience, you know, and like this, like, you know, this desire to have like, wow, if I just could have relived it. And then Van actually like running a VHS store to essentially like pause time in the 90s. I think it's like a really interesting character choice that I was really hung up on. Like, what is this video store? That when it actually gets revealed, you're like, that's such a bad business decision.
and proven by the fact that she's getting past due notices.
But it makes a lot of sense for the character having been like plane crash in 96. And then, wow, okay, let me like live through 96 is essentially.
Yeah. And we'll, so funnily enough, there'll be another podcast releasing on Monday where Marissa and I get together with a guest, Melissa, to go over kind of how the different characters in Yellow Jackets process trauma. And it's funny because we recorded it already. Oh. But so we'll talk about it in depth there. But one of the things we talked about is how Shauna kind of exhibits a little bit of this too. They all do to a certain extent, but Shauna is the one like paying someone to go buy her booze, like pretending to be a teenager, right? Like making these like teeny tiny screwdrivers, jumping off of a bridge naked, right? She's trying to recapture youth that was lost as a result of the plane crash. And it seems like Van is doing something similar. My question is she, has she been doing this all along? Or if like there is something there where she does mention cancer, like her mom had cancer, if it's secretly Van is the one with cancer or some sort of illness that she's needing to take the oxy for, is she doing this as like a, this was my dream and I'm going to live out my dream before I die type of thing? I don't think that's off the table. That feels like that could be a real thing that's happening.
Very interesting. Yeah, I didn't think about that because I felt like the, oh, it's for my mom was just a lie. And that was just not true once we see Van go and do it. But I didn't think that like, yeah, the sliver of truth in the lie is like, actually I'm dying. I think that's really fascinating in terms of that could be something that's going on just from the sense of, having this like, such a tragic experience and then potentially having your life cut so short by something else and trying to like reconcile those things. That's pretty fascinating to me if that's the way they're going
to
go.
Yeah. And it makes sense to me that she wouldn't immediately tell Thaisa, someone who's already dealing with enough. And that's kind of her own thing, right? Like it's her own baggage. She's not going to want to put that on Ty right away.
Yeah. And not that other people, not that there can't be multiple addiction storylines in a season, but the fact that Nat is so, and specifically in the last episode, is so heavily dealing with still like addiction in terms of, and the scene with Lisa where she like does put the, she like puts the, pushes the shot glass away. Like not that there can't be two people who are dealing with addiction, like, very common thing to happen in society. You just think on a TV show sometimes like, to run.
You're not going to have two people do this. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you could, because it could, it could be an interesting thing to like bond them. But yeah, the idea that it might actually be something completely different in the sense that Van is dealing with perhaps like a chronic end of life illness.
It wouldn't surprise me just generally because like you expect someone to get sick on a show at some point, I guess. I feel like the big C, cancer, is like on every single show. So it wouldn't surprise me if she was dealing with something like that. And again, lying about it, there is a bit of truth in that lie, and maybe that's how she's able to get away with lying to Thaisa, someone who might be able to tell that she's lying to her.
I mean, if I'm just gonna go full theories,
why not?
There's also this idea that like if the spirit is helpful, so if the spirit that the, like, right, because the idea is that like it helped them find, it helped the bear came and Lottie was able to kill the bear. And what other stuff is like, have we, like they've been helped, right? Like Jackie, like the fact
that
like
birds. Jackie,
yeah, the birds dying, like the spirit does seem like if you abide by it, it helps you. And so one way to maybe think about if Van is suffering, has been suffering from a chronic illness and potentially maybe not that long or whatever, however long it's been. And we talked about this idea, like, has there been a reawakening of the spirit? Like has 25 years passed and it's been like, it's like, we're not hopping into these people like 10 years after the plane crash and they're dealing with stuff. We're like purposely, like it's been 25 years later. And then we start to get the like blackmail stuff. And as that's happening, like there's more stuff happening with Ty and all of this stuff. Has Van actually been, and we know Van's relationship with Ty, they're very close. The fact that Ty starts to eat the dirt outside Sammy's room and kills the dog and all of this stuff, as Van is like, well, my usual, like everything that I'm doing to try and like beat this thing is not working. Maybe I need to like get back into some of the, blood sacrifice cult stuff. And that Van maybe is like more aware of and maybe more involved in some of the stuff that has been happening than we would like to know. And I think that especially works for me, and again, like I don't care, I just like theorizing, and the show can do whatever it wants. I'm not like hung up on a theory, but the fact that Lottie was, I think we were so convinced, like, here's adult Lottie, she's gonna be so evil, and the fact that she's not really been evil, and then we get a Van who has like had a very, very good like edit so far, like in terms of,
I know,
both the 90s and the present day. Like,
we're all rooting for Van. Like, no one is rooting against Van.
Betrayal would be big if it's like, actually,
oh, no,
Van was doing blood sacrifice and actually
Van is Antler Queen.
And actually has caused Ty to like snap back into like, what do you call it? Like,
Issa, we call her. Right? Yeah.
Like, that feels possible.
Well, that's the other thing, right? Is with Van around now in the present timeline, I feel like it's more likely that we're going to see a reemergence of Issa even more so than we have seen previously, right? Like, so we leave off with Issa saying, like, we're not supposed to be here, or like, this isn't where we're supposed to be, right? Mm-hmm. Now everyone has my husband live in the chat. Will they all return to the woods? This is very much the Lostian, like, we have to go back, right? Like, we don't belong here. I truly believe, I think all of us do, that at the very least, by the end of the season, we're going to get some sort of adult Yellow Jackets grouped up together. Maybe it's Lottie's cult compound or whatever. Yes. Everyone will be reunited at some point, whether or not they go back to the wilderness as soon as season three remains to be seen. But I truly think that's what's going to happen. Now, it seems like Issa is the one who has come, kind of emerged, and is leading the charge. Van, I mean, it's gonna be tough. Like, with Van around, I think it's more and more likely Issa will be taking more and more control over Thaisa's body.
This is what scared me, is that Van does seem to have some control and is like intrigued by Lottie, and so is like, you know, and I just do worry that like Van is maybe more sinister than we think. Yeah
it's
because all gays are evil.
The other thing, geographically though, I have a question, because okay, generally speaking, the Yellow Jackets are based in New Jersey, right? Yes. Like, that is their home base. Yes. Now, we know that Van lives across Pennsylvania, because Thaisa has mentioned, I hitchhiked all the way across Pennsylvania to find you. Mm-hmm. Do we know exactly where Lottie's cult compound is?
Probably right close to exactly where they all need to be.
In Pennsylvania? Yeah.
I don't know. We could maybe do some digging with like Walter and Misty. They decide that they're gonna go on the road trip. I don't know that they go to that farmer's market. I don't know if we get a town name in the farmer's market.
I think so.
I know. I did. I mean, this is just the filming, but I did catch, because I was supremely interested.
Yeah.
When Nicole Maines was on the podcast, we interviewed Nicole. She did name drop the name of the camp, which is Camp Howe, which is in Massachusetts. So,
they're filming in the Northeast. Okay.
Yeah. So camp, it's possible that there's multiple Camp Howes. This is the Camp Howe that most comes up. So, yeah, Massachusetts. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're all kind of on team. They're going to end up reuniting. We got some really fun feedback that I want to shout out from Tracy. She compares Yellow Jackets a bit. So she talks a lot about, in her feedback, like, it's a coming of age story. It's also kind of a horror type. Like, it falls into both of these genres. She compares it to It. She says, I don't think the Yellow Jackets teens will collectively see, let alone battle, the evil entity during the 1996 timeline. But if, or more likely when, the adult survivors return to the Canadian wilderness in a future season, it'll very much give off vibes of the grown-up version of the Losers Club confronting Pennywise. Another iconic baddie that is a sinister entity that goes dormant after a murderous feeding frenzy is the titular monster of the Jeepers Creepers movie franchise. The demonic creature known as the Creeper goes on a killing and feeding spree every 23 years for a span of 23 days. With this dark force in Yellow Jackets resurfacing after 25 years, it looks like it's splitting the time difference between those two franchises I've named. Perhaps it feeds off of a certain amount of blood sacrifices, murders included, every 25 years.
Interesting. That I know that their Yellow Jackets was partially based on It, but the problem was, instead of the Yellow Jackets, they were going to be called the Dairy Girls, and
so
they couldn't do that, so they're like, I don't know, soccer team. I don't know. I think it's very interesting of like it being dormant and needing, that's a horror thing, certainly, of like, okay, like the supernatural, it's going to make a weird, supernatural daddy is hungry, you know, like, you know, come on, it's been 25 years.
Feed me, kill someone.
Yeah. And so
biscuit wasn't enough.
Yeah. And like having some connection, you know, that's been interesting, is that like, Lottie and Ty are the people are like, you have the connection to it. Right.
Right.
Is the thing that one of the things I would like to be explained at some point is, like, what is that? How does the, you know, the that connection happen before? Because the Noah Man appears to Thaisa before they ever go out to the wilderness.
That's what I was going to say. Both Thaisa and Lottie, we have seen younger versions of them in supernatural situations. So yeah. Thaisa, you mentioned her grandmother is dying. Her grandmother mentioned seeing a man, and she sees the no-eyed man in the mirror, right? Eyes being very important to the symbology of Yellow Jackets. We have the crossed out Queen of her eyes on the Queen of Hearts card is crossed out. In the very first episode, the very first scene of the show, when Pit Girl is running through the woods, it appears, now birch trees kind of have this look anyway, but it appears that there are kind of these like bleeding eyes on the trees, right? Mm-hmm. And then for Lottie, when she is a kid, she has this premonition about her parents getting into a car accident. She kind of knows it's coming. She screams. They stop. They get very worried about her and start putting her on medication. So, yeah. Like, it's interesting that those are the two characters that we have seen further flashbacks of versus all these other characters, because it speaks to, like, them being these, like, vessels, if you will, or closer to, like, those supernatural entities. But I do think that, like, Van is a character we could possibly be sleeping on in terms of her connection. Not necessarily that she is connected to everything, but she is very much a proponent of those things, right? Mm-hmm. She is with Lottie when Lottie sacrifices the bear heart to the tree trunk, to the wilderness. Yeah. Yeah. And she is the one saying to Thaisa, it's you. You're connected to all of it. Let's right. go out and find the next symbol on the trees. You should talk to Lottie, right? Like, she's very pushing this spiritual mentality.
I mean, it's not in the realm of possibility that, like, any of the Yellow Jackets, I think Van would be my leading candidate for this, also saw something before they ever went out, and also is way more connected to it than we even know, right? Yeah. I think that's entirely possible. And again, like, I think that, yeah, something to, you know, Ty is being told by her alter ego, like, go to Van. How do we know Van isn't behind that? Of like, come to me, come find me.
Yeah, it's making me wonder more and more and more what conversations. Okay, because for all we know right now, Thaisa in the 96 timeline isn't sleepwalking.
That's right.
She is remaining herself. She knows where she is at all times, right? She's mm-hmm. supposedly sleeping through the night, mm-hmm. according to her and according to Van.
Yeah.
She has not been sleepwalking since she started attending these like prayer circles, I guess, mm-hmm. that Lottie is putting on. Now, to me, the familiarity with which Ty's alter and Van seem to know each other, Van knows as soon as she changes, she knows it's not Ty. She knows it's her alter. So then my question is, like, something must happen to where Ty starts experiencing these alters again, right? Like, and when that happens, I so badly want to see the conversations that are had between the alter and Ty, era and Van. Because there's a closeness there, right?
The thing that I'm pretty interested in is I do feel like episodes 1 and 2 came out so hard this season of like cannibalism. Is that episode 2? Yeah, because that's one is the eating of the ear, 2 is eating of all of Jackie.
Yeah.
It came out so hard. We were talking in the Versus pod and we said I was on, I think, the episode 2 or 3 feedback, and it was whatever when they ate Jackie, and being like, you know, Succession has been good, but like Yellow Jackets is like kicked off like real hard, like it's like it's going for it, and I do feel like we've slowed down, not in a way that I think has been bad. I'm not, you know, I think it's been really, I think that makes sense. You can't like have them all be like that. That's a very unique show to be able to like 10 episodes, 9 episodes in a row be that big.
Yeah,
but I do think that there's a chance that we are really ramping up to something. To the point, I don't know if the time can work here. I know that we can be renewed for 2 more seasons. And I was kind of feeling like the end of this season might be the one where they, if they're reunited, then they're like, okay, we got to go back, which sets up like season 3. We're going back. But that even maybe feels too early for me now.
I would say the earliest we would get actually back to the wilderness is like a mid-season 3 is my thought. That's the absolute earliest I would think.
But I think the thing for me that I'm watching for in terms of what's happening in 1996 to 1998 is that, are we in still 96 or are we in 97 now?
Because we're in spring. 96.
But they don't get rescued till 1998? Or 1998, we just saw like stuff of them.
We're
being like,
end of 96, early 97, and then they get rescued in 98.
Okay. So the thing for me is that based on the conversations that could happen that happened in season one, or when they're being blackmailed and they're like, nobody can know what we did out there. I do feel like that has been downplayed because there's nobody like looking for them, right? Like nobody, right? Like Shauna doesn't really, you know, it's mostly about Adam. So like, whatever. But the fact that they were like, it got so bad out there. Like, and the pit girl is the other piece of this that like, it's going to get so, so bad. And
well, I know this is just the first winter too. They still have another winter to get through.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And the thing is now they can do all the preparing they want, right? They could try to get as much game as they want as soon as
you go fish that moose
cold
out of the river or in the lake.
Yeah, they could do as much preparation as they want in terms of getting game, hopefully finding ways to keep that game fresh, you know, freeze it, whatever. But I think what's scarier than going through it the first time is knowing that it's coming up a second time, right? And I think that is when we probably get into the, oh my God, okay, now we're really leaning into the faith, leaning into Lottie's method. What's Lottie's next method? We're going to pull cards to see who's going to be the sacrifice, because the wilderness needs a sacrifice in order to feed us. And so who are we sacrificing?
Well, that's, if the, you know, really, if it's not till the second winter that Pit Girl happens, we're a long way from Pit Girl, huh?
Yes. However, I think it's important to point out this season has been very quick about jumping forward in time. Like Shauna was not that pregnant at the beginning. She was pregnant, but she was probably four months pregnant at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
We're at the point where she's given, we've jumped quite a bit of time in this season. So I like that the show isn't, we have 19 months to cover, you know, like I like the show's not afraid to jump ahead a few months at a time. I mean, also knowing what we know that the creators have said in terms of they're aiming for a 5-season show. Uh-huh. They have, I mean, you have to imagine they have a timeline in their head of like, this happens in this season and this season, that season. And I do think that, I mean, this is kind of what we've both been saying. I know Marissa and I have said it as well. We both kind of think like, okay, we're going to switch places here. We're going to have present day people go back to the wilderness day people, you know, 1998, they're rescued. We're going to see them adapting back into civilization. So,
I have a couple thoughts on that. So one, I mean, to finish my points on that about like, it's going to get bad. And I am just not counting out that it's, you know, I think like we have to be looking at the fact that it's our like core crew who are the people who are doing the worst stuff, because they're the most like we gotta keep it secret. Shauna's like calling Ty and like Misty and Nat are involved, of like, yeah, this stuff cannot come out. Like we did real bad stuff. So, and then I think Van is an interesting piece of that. And I would very interested to go back if when they're like talking about keeping all that stuff covered, how much Ty talks about Van at all.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
But the other piece that I'm interested in is we see them return home. They get off the plane and there's like paparazzi. But one thing I'm interested in is, and this is a thing that, you know, to talk about Lost a bit, not unlikely to talk about Lost on a Post Recaps podcast, is how I'm so intrigued about do they get found like at the cabin, or is there some sort of like in season one we had the trek, right? We're gonna go, right? Isn't that
they take the hike to find, like that's when they find the cabin, because they go to the lake.
But some underground bunker that leads somewhere else that like ends up being, and then the thing is like, how do you find the wilderness? Because to me, the other piece of some of the stuff I was talking about earlier in terms of people who had visions of things before they went is what were they supposed to go there? Like, this is not like the plane crashed accidentally. This is like nature made, like the spirits made sure that this group of people ended up in the forest. And how do you make sure that you get back to this place that like, maybe doesn't exist. Like, does it exist? Is it like, I'm going to get D&D. Is it on like another plane? Is it like not another plane?
Is it like a lost type thing though? Right. Like, is this, I think I land my brain. I think lands less supernatural in that way. Not necessarily that there aren't supernatural forces that caused them to crash, but more so that I don't know that these specific people were destined to crash here. I feel like if we're leaning in that direction supernaturally, it is more likely like the wilderness needed somebody. And this was the plane that was flying overhead at that moment, you know, like we did get some interesting theory. I'm going to pull it up here. From Patrick, we got some feedback from Patrick. His theory, I don't necessarily agree with all of this, but I do think it's interesting the way he's framing it all. I have this theory that Shauna's baby actually survives the wilderness, and out of guilt or need to protect the baby from Lottie, she tells Jackie's parents it was her baby, or just puts it up for adoption. I also think the quote-unquote spirit of the woods is looking for a host, and that maybe the baby could be the vessel it wants. Perhaps the dead cabin man was a previous host. I don't know, but my theory is that it possesses the baby. He grows up unaware of who his parents are, probably thinking Jackie was his mom, blah, 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 blah. Brings me to the thought that perhaps Adam was Shauna's son / the harbinger of the spirit, and he sought her out because he learned she was Jackie's best friend. Obviously, wild things ensued. They ended up killing him, releasing the spirit 25 years later. Now it's looking for a new host. Now, I am very much on board of like, Adam is dead. We don't care about Adam. It's not also, about Adam.
That's some incest, I think, right? Shauna and Adam? Yep. Thank you. Not that the show couldn't do it, but, you know.
Yeah, but what I want to focus on from Patrick is more of this spirit looking for a host. I find that very fascinating, right? Because there's still a lot of mystery around Cabin Man and who he was and what he was doing there and why is he surrounded by these symbols on the floor, right? Like all of these things. Why did he kill himself? Like all of these things we still have questions about. The spirit looking for a host I find fascinating. I don't necessarily think that is exactly what's going on. Like I don't know that like I think that there's this wilderness entity that is like smoke monstering its way into people. I do think it's like influential. If we're leaning supernatural, it does feel like the wilderness provides, right? Like if you kill someone or you spill blood as a sacrifice to the wilderness, it will provide for you. And I think it's gonna be very interesting if we get those present day characters out there, because I think it's fascinating that Lottie still, like you've said, Grace, Lottie is a character that like we were supposed to fear going into this season. Yeah. And I still do very much fear her, but not for the same reasons. We see that moment when she, as an adult, cuts her hand and says, "Can this just be enough?" Like she doesn't even know what's going on. She's supposed to be this all-knowing person and she has no clue what's going on.
And when that happens, that's when they find Javi. Like she doesn't find Javi, but they find Javi.
That's not the same episode. No, cuts her hand. That's when her and Nat have like a hunting competition. Nat finds the moose.
The moose
escapes them again, whether or not it's because did Nat do something to piss off the spirits by not believing Lottie, right? Like there could be something there.
I don't mind the host thing. The reason it potentially works for me is because I'm really wary about how bad our core people will be. And I do think there needs to be something that can sort of make us be okay with them doing really awful things, whether it's like being influenced by somebody. I feel like it even helps a little bit if like one of them is literally like basically possessed of like, they kill Pick Girl because like they're possessed by a spirit. Like I think that's interesting because I think one of the challenges, and it's of like a lot of horror movies and like things like this, is like who ends up being the big bad of this show and the villain of this show. I think it's so hard to then just like, you know, we've seen the No-Eyed Man, but even the No-Eyed Man, like, is he just going to be like, you know, in two seasons, like a season for now, just being like talking and being the like, and they have to try and defeat, like, that's maybe not as compelling to me as like it being somebody who we already know super well, and there being a mystery behind why they might have been like, you know, the Antler Queen of it all, I think is like is a compelling mystery, because not only because it's fun to try and figure out who it's going to be, but also like what pushes them to do that. And that can either be like psychological, that can be like psychological, like it's incredibly tough to survive, as you said, like a second winter in the wilderness. And this is a person who's just like, no, like we have to be ruthless, or we'll all, like, if we don't sacrifice one person, then we all die. So that's bad. Or it could be like them believing, you know, it is Lottie who believes really like a lot in the supernatural stuff, or like actually someone being possessed. I think there is something to the host theory that like is intriguing to me in a way that like, if it ends up being like they have to fight the No-Eyed Man, that's like less, I think a little bit less interesting to me, if that makes sense. But I don't know. I can, you know, again, I'm not like, it has to be this theory or I'll be disappointed in the show.
Yeah, I think they could have a compelling case in either direction, really. Like, I'm willing, I'm open to whatever the show wants to do if they're doing it in a compelling way and in a way that makes sense for the characters and for what they've already established. Grace, do we want to do one more thing? This will really benefit anybody who is watching with us live on the YouTube, on the YouTube show, on the YouTube video. Mm-hmm. Because you sent me something from Crave. This is a Canadian thing.
Yeah, so Crave is a Canadian streaming service. I believe it's owned by Bell Media. And as part of Crave, you can get Crave plus HBO. So we don't have HBO Max. We have Crave plus HBO. And yeah, when you log in, there are like a series of like, it's promoting different shows. And I did keep seeing this and then was like, I don't know. And then I would just click on the thing or move to whatever. And then one day I was like, wait, this is super weird. Can we just, and I sent it to you because I was like, what is happening here? And essentially to describe it for the podcast listener, there is 7 people in a circle looking down, and they are all wearing different animal masks, similar to like the Antler Queen mask, even a little different than that. They're all based on different animals. So there's
like, it almost is like, reminds me a bit like if you crossed the Yellow Jackets in the Pit Girl scene with like Lottie's cult followers in when they're doing the like naked burial scene.
They are almost all wearing purple. This is very interesting. They're all wearing purple.
They all like, are
the
one purple.
there's like a fiery shade to the person on the bottom right that maybe does not seem super purple.
But yeah, what's interesting is that like they're obviously all wearing different strange animal masks. There's also like, they're not the characters that we know. Like, it seems.
I don't think so, because one of them who's wearing like a bird pigeony type mask definitely has a goatee.
Yeah.
And so like,
and
that's
it
not
also
Coach
looks
ben,
like there's another hobby. Person with very short hair in like this goat looking thing.
So my best guess is this is entirely promotional and is not anything that was on set. Like literally, like, unless maybe, but the scene where they're doing the Richard, just the man is naked, right?
Nobody just the man is naked.
Yeah. I mean, it could be.
They all are wearing purple, it looks like.
Yeah, I think they all are wearing purple.
But this also makes me question, because again, when we see Lottie's cult and they're wearing these animal masks, I don't know that they're this like realistic looking. I don't remember them being this realistic. It makes me wonder, when does she incorporate the heliotrope of it all, you know?
Yeah, I do love it visually. I think it's great. It's really good. Like, I think that they're very creepy, especially a couple of them.
The rabbit one,
Leatherface rabbit, is really creepy.
I hate it.
And then there's the one that like the goat, like the cow with horns, is really creepy, I think. I feel like little owl's face is the least creepy, I think. That guy, or the two birds, I think, unfortunately, are the least creepy, I think. But
Yeah, but anyway, it is very interesting. This image, it probably is promotional material, but like, it's still fascinating to look at it and be like, what are they trying to listen? If we know anything from Succession, if we've learned anything from Succession, yeah, there could be secrets in the promotional material.
It's true. The plane, so, the hidden plane,
the hidden plane. But anyway, we're Grace. We have a few more days slash actually like a week until. I showed you the mental gymnastics of when the next episode comes out. I really want another episode to drop, but unfortunately,
a week and a day, right?
A week and a day. We're gonna have to wait.
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to discuss? Any other theories you wanted to drop before we wrap things up for another week?
No. One thing I will say I'm surprised by is that Kevin Tan has no interest in Natalie. And I can't really remember. I didn't rewatch the season. How does their relationship sort of like end in season one? Like how do they leave things off? Natalie and Kevin Tan.
So Natalie sleeps with Kevin Tan, steals his gun, takes it, and they chase off who turns out to be Jeff in the glitter factory situation.
Yes.
She shoots a bullet. He gets pissed because he took her gun.
Right. He asks, he'll have to do a report and like account for the bullet. Yes. Right.
And I feel like that's pretty much she just used him to get information on Travis's death, basically.
So obviously he's around because he's hanging out with what's his face to, you know,
Matt Syracuse. Syracuse is loose, is what he says.
He's going to Sarah accuse you of being a murderer.
A Syracuse.
So I do feel like, I don't know, I guess are they just like, they're not really interested in Kevin Tan and Nat, but because I definitely thought this season was going to be.
That's
like
how they're going to get Lutz back in.
Yeah, like Kevin Tan was going to be like, well, Natalie's missing, so we've got to figure that thing out. But no, he does not care about that at all, seemingly. I don't know, just a stray observation. I mostly because I like Josh. I really like Kevin Tan, but I feel like he's doing a terrible job as a police officer.
Will says, Natalie was mean and said she didn't really like him. Okay, that's true. Right. She did. She did tell him that. Yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, I think like it is a way to get Kevin Tan involved and right, like he... I think what's important about that whole thing is that Kevin Tan knows Shauna, knows her story, knows a lot about her, and he knows that she is someone who can lie to your face, you know? So I think he's like, if we're going to go after Shauna, we better have something ironclad, I think is why, like, he's involved in all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. Certainly going to be a player in all of this. But yeah, we'll be back in a week's time with a new episode to discuss. In the meantime, if you want to send in feedback, posherrecaps.com/buzzbuzzbuzz. Send us in your theories and your feedback. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, posherrecaps.com/yellowjackets. If you want to go to posherrecaps.com/subscribe, you could find all of the podcasts that we are covering. We have so many podcasts, so many TV shows, like Grace was saying, an embarrassment of riches right now.
Yeah.
Grace, speaking of, what podcasts do you have to shout out? What have you been up to?
Oh, well, in addition to Yellow Jackets, also talking about Succession. The Sunday nights did a lot of Succession talking this week. I think people will be sick of my Succession takes on season 4, episode 5, because we did the recap episode. I did the deep dive with Amanda and Lindsay, and I did the Rob and Josh show without Josh. We learned that Josh is dead, actually. Jess, did you hear this news?
I didn't hear this news.
Yes. Yeah, we kept getting pictures of Mike Bloom, who wanted carte blanche on the funeral arrangements, wanted to put him in a Dharma Initiative suit.
Oh, no.
Yeah. We had to say no. Yeah, because with the deal, they're trying to carve out the Posher Recaps acquirement deal to RJP. They're trying to carve out down the hatch, obviously. And Josh died. Because Josh died.
It's a really big issue.
Yeah. I guess I am spoiling Succession on the Yellow Jacket Squad. I guess. There's a death.
There is a death.
That's fine. Whatever. Doing a dark rewatch podcast with Ariel and DM Philly. That's been a lot of fun. One of my highlights of the week, as well as doing movie coverage with Ariel on Posher Recaps Theater. Last week, Great Expectations wrapped up. And Great Expectations was actually super great. Don't listen to the review bombs that it got because they casted, they did blind casting and diversity cast. Watch the show. It's great. It was really good. And I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. This Saturday, actually, sorry, just one last thing. RHAP Game Night, Saturday, April 29th at 4 p.m. Eastern. If you can come check it out live, we're playing Settlers of Catan. Here's the list. 3 survivors, Omer, Dwight, and Xander are going to play against myself. Not again, we're all against each other, but yeah, Survivors versus RJP podcasters. Myself, Kirsten McInnes, and Mari Forth is the crew. RJP Game Night. We're playing Settlers of Catan. So come join us and catch a replay on Twitch or YouTube afterwards.
That sounds amazing. You could find me at the Jess Sterling on Twitter. I'm mostly just talking Yellow Jackets in succession because that's all I watch on repeat all day, every day.
Yeah.
So check me out there. You could also hear me on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me with Sarah Ferguson discussing 90s content. We recently recently watched for the first time Varsity Blues, which was interesting. It's football. Football in Texas. So many things that I can relate to. We also watched But I'm a Cheerleader, which was very fun. And we talked about it, Grace, with your friend and mine, Ariel, which was so
you're talking
fun.
About a movie with Ariel?
Without me? Stole him from you. Fun.
And, I mean, that makes sense. Natasha Lyonne.
She doesn't smoke in it, though. So, you know, a little bit of disappointment for Ariel. But you can check that out at Shit90s Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And we will be back in just 1 week with more Yellow Jackets to talk about. Until then, a licky boom boom down.